More stories with Alejandro Rojas. We'll also take your phone calls and questions. If you've got a great UFO story, share that. No lights tonight. Just don't want to talk about the lights, but if you have a great case, check in with us. Outside of Peru, what other areas, Alejandro, are we getting many UFO cases from?
Well, the United States, of course, is always hot, but you know what is always also been surprisingly really hot, and I'm sure there are a lot of listeners that you have because there's a lot of interest, the U.K., the U.K. has a lot of cases going on. Their media covers it and takes it pretty seriously for the most part. But they get a lot of sightings. In fact, just last week there was one by a Navy, a retired British Navy aeronautical engineer where he had taken a picture while he was on vacation at a resort town, and he was on a ferry. He took a picture of the town. This is one of those cases where he didn't notice anything until he looked at the picture later. Almost always, those typically turn out to be bugs or birds and things you don't notice when you're taking a picture. But this one's peculiar in that one of the objects that you can see is like a perfect circle. It's like some of these old 50s circular flying disc UFO pictures that you see. It's really intriguing that the U.K., has a lot of sightings.
They sure do. And, of course, they have a lot of crop formations. That's where most of them started, right? Didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. That's where they started. You know, it was that's where they all happen. The majority of them in one portion of the country. But that's where it all began, and it's always been the major hotspot for the crop circles.
Tell me a little bit about what's been going on in terms of research that we might not know about. Maybe you do. Anything going on governmentally?
Governmentally, not really in our country, unfortunately. But really, France is exciting. There was a conference recently that was really exciting. Leslie Kane had a lot to do with organizing it, and that was in North Carolina. It's for a group called the Center for UFO Research. Ken Center, who actually works with MUFON in the area, put this on, and it was kind of unique in that it was his fulfilling his bucket list. He found out he has a terminal cancer, and he was misdiagnosed and won a lawsuit, and with a portion of that money, he decided he wanted to put on the best conference he could. He got together some very credible people, including some representatives from various governmental UFO organizations, and Wilfred de Brouwer, also from Belgium, who investigated the wave of triangular craft in the 90s there. But one of the people there was Xavier Passot from France's JPON. And they have a lot of really neat investigations going on there. They are essentially part of the equivalent of France's NASA. And they post all of their findings on their website. So if you know French, you can go there and see the results of all of their investigations. Unfortunately, we don't have anybody out here translating those and posting those, which would be a great service. I've always thought of that, but I don't know anybody who knows French who could get that done. But they have a lot going on. And I think keeping an eye on some of these other countries. So, for instance, Leslie Kane works very closely with Chile and CEPAA.
Yeah.
They have new cases going on. I know Leslie's working on some stuff, and I think she'll be helping them release some stuff soon. Also, I'm really excited to hear from Peru. I mean, if you go to, for instance, if you go to openminds.tv, where you'll find all of these stories, I posted a story today with some of the videos and some of the news reports that had prompted Peru to reopen their organization. And some of these videos are very compelling of these balls of light floating around different areas in Peru that are completely unexplainable. So I'm excited to hear what they find when they go to investigate that.
What's going on in terms of other investigations, from other private individuals like the Richard Dolans and people like that? Anything?
You know what? To be honest, right now, it doesn't seem as though there are a lot of in-depth hardcore that I'm aware of.
It's like a lull, isn't it?
A little bit of a lull. I think that the Roswell guys, Don Schmidt, Kevin Randall, they've got this dream team now. They're doing some stuff. They have a possible lead that's been alluded to in online, and it's hard to know what's going on with that. But I'm sure they'll be talking about that sometime soon. That might be exciting. And they're always doing something. You know, Frank Kimbler, who's another Roswell guy, I think we were the first to report on a piece of metal he got analyzed, and that analysis came back as most probably not created on this planet, but as he's a geologist out of the military institute there at Roswell. In fact, when he moved to go be a teacher or a professor there, that's when he decided, hey, I'm in Roswell, I'm into UFOs, I'm going to go see if I can find some debris and you put my own expertise to it. So he did. He took some geological maps, some satellite images, figured out where he thought would be the best spot, found some materials that he could not explain, got them analyzed. As he says, you know, he's a geologist, he knows science, that you can't just go with one study, you have to have multiple studies, and they've got to be from credible sources. And that's not easy to do. Some people ask, well, you know, why don't we have more evidence? Why aren't more things analyzed? Because it costs money. And even if you have the money, doesn't mean you can go knocking on any lab's door and say, hey, analyze this material from a UFO. He actually found that out really quickly when he went to a lab and he said, I want this metal analyzed. And he didn't say what for, but the scientist said, well, you said you got this in outside of Roswell. He's like, I know what this is, you know, get out of here. And that, you know, he thought it was ridiculous. And luckily it was one of his lab technicians that said, hey, you know, I'm more open-minded about this and I'll help you get it analyzed. So he got the one study done. He needs to get another done and he's working on that and hopefully that'll happen soon. But that's really exciting because if he finds, it's aluminum. If he finds, and it's a rare type of aluminum, but not something impossible that could be made here, but you do a type of analysis that can demonstrate whether the material is made on this planet or not. If an aluminum is something that's not found natural, it's manufactured. If he's able to demonstrate that this piece of metal was manufactured off-planet, that's very significant.
Sure is. Let's take a few calls here. Tim is in Jacksonville, Florida. Hey, Tim, good morning.
Hey, George. This is Tim in Jacksonville. Appreciate it, man. Great show. I missed half of John's.
John McAfee,
Excellent stuff, man.
Thank you.
I wish I could send a kudos out to him, but I'm sure he gets it all the time. Don't need to waste your time on that. I'm pretty much an ETer, right? I love UFO stuff. I always question it from a biblical basis, but I question it from, you know, scientific, mathematical, all that good stuff. Your guest is amazing, even the second one. Your shows are what they are. So I guess I have one statement. And you guys kick alpha. I'll leave that alone. If I think about ideas or controlled release of data, whether we're talking about pictures, people's information, social network, let's talk about media, the way the movies are propagating stuff. You know, I made a comment to a friend of mine. I said, you know, it's funny because, you know, the zombie movies, when I grew up, they were dummies, right? They were just, you could zigzag, you could laugh at them, you could get away from them. I mean, classic 80s movies where, you know, people freak out and they run different patterns. But actually today we see that it may be biological. And I said that as a joke, you know, an LOL. But you know, stuff's being released in the media, the entertainment industry. Now, I work for a financial, I work in the financial sector.
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot of things happening, man. It's good, it's exciting, but it's also somewhat scary at times. So anyway, that would be my question or statement. Controlled release of data. Data comes in many ways, and John hit on it. He's like, I hope when I get that young, I can be that open-minded with my kids. And,
well, that would be great. Let's get your reaction to this in terms of controlled data. Well, there's no question that happens, but in the UFO field, I don't think they release anything at all, do they?
Well, you know, I would agree with you, but I also do feel, if we purely speculate, I know a lot of people have an idea that perhaps there is a controlled release of information from the government, but I am not so sure about that because, as you say, it seems like very little of substance is released. However, a lot of the people such as, let's say, Dr. Leo Sprinkle or some others feel that there's a controlled release of information, not from the government, but from the phenomena, from potentially extraterrestrials, that this is kind of an evolution that we're going through that's engineered by, people visiting us, and that could be what's going on. And, that media, I think, is more of a reflection of what's happening in people's consciousness. I've now gotten to meet a lot of the people behind a lot of the television shows like X-Files or others, and it's not necessarily they're working for the government. They're just interested in the topic, and they're followers of, the Don Schmitz or the Richard Dolans out there, and they're learning, and then that's reflecting in their stories, and it's kind of like we're all learning together, let alone with now we have the internet here, and it's almost like this, we're able to communicate instantly. It's almost like one step towards all of us being able to read each other's minds or something. It's this incredible leap in our ability to communicate. So it could be something even more enigmatic that we're all going through, including the government and government employees. That's speculating, but it is interesting to see this evolution that we're going through, and it's going so quickly.
What do you think of Edgar Mitchell and his belief about Roswell?
Well, he's a very credible person, of course. What I always find interesting about Edgar Mitchell is that people love to talk about Edgar Mitchell and how he talks about how Roswell is real, and they love to believe that part. But he's sort of a conundrum because then people like to say, oh, we didn't visit the moon, when, of course, Edgar Mitchell says he did so. People say, oh, they had seen UFOs on the moon and NASA sees UFOs. And Edgar Mitchell says, no, when I was with NASA, I didn't see any UFOs. I heard stories from other astronauts, but I didn't see anything myself. I didn't see anything on the moon. I believe him. I believe all of those things. I believe, that he probably didn't. I've been able to now interview some astronauts, and some do believe they have seen things. Some don't. Edgar Mitchell doesn't believe he did. I believe Edgar Mitchell was on the moon. John Schuessler himself with MUFON worked on the Apollo project. He helped get people to the moon. I believe we really were there. And when he says he's heard from people in Roswell, his hometown, that really did happen, I believe that too. I mean, when we look at Don Schmidt's work, Stanton Friedman's work, any of these guys' work, they have an abundance of witnesses who have some extraordinary stories, and so that all rings true. So I think it's wonderful that he's brave enough to champion this stuff and to come forward and risk his reputation, and he has. He has risked his relationship with NASA, which we know has been damaged. He's talked about that. Others have, and it publicly kind of played out a couple of years ago when he really came out in the media and said, these things are real.
All right, let's take one more call before the break, and then we'll finish up with some more. Steve is in Albany, New York. Steven, go ahead.
Yeah, I've been abducted many times, and I know I have. They do it in my sleep, and I'd have these dreams that I was being ripped up off the ground, and I was grabbing for things. And so I never knew what that was, and I had wake up with panic attacks. I couldn't sleep. I mean, I couldn't breathe when I woke up from my sleep. But there was one time, it was April, I think, of 1970, in which I woke up, and I saw these great creatures around me, and I was inside a vehicle. And I realized that I had to ask them where I was and how it worked. And at that point in time, I found myself in, it looked like gray all around me. I couldn't breathe. I was trying to gasp for air. And then I woke up in my bedroom. And it would have been just like a dream until I fell from the air and hit my bed. And that told me, whatever that dream was, I could, you know, my arms were down by my side, and my, you know, it was like like a mummy, and whatever that dream was, it was something extraterrestrial. That was when I was 15. I'm 60 now.
Wow.
45 years ago.
Never forgot it.
No, never forgot it. But the thing is, that was before anybody knew what graves were. That was before it was popular. And this is the first time I've talked to you about it, or anybody else. I'm on national radio because I've been afraid to talk about it. And it was the graves. And I've been, you know, it's just took years to get it out of me. But, you know, I have sleep apnea, and I've heard that people with sleep apnea, most of us were abducted at one time. But I used to have, when I was a child, I used to have dreams of, you know, flying around in a spaceship and all sorts of stuff, and I never knew where it was coming from. But I have a lot of answers to a lot of questions, a lot of stuff that Linda Moulton Howell talks about. I know answers to that, but I don't really want to come forward and talk about it because I don't know anybody to talk to, and nobody wants, I don't know anybody around me that wants to hear it.
Let's see if we can help you here, Steve. Who do you talk to these days now that Dr. John Mack is no longer with us, Alejandro?
Yeah, and that's the real hard part. And I really think that this is one of the travesties of the mainstream therapy, in that you have a lot of people with these reports. And even if you're skeptical and you believe it's just a psychological phenomenon, well, then it should be studied and it should be looked into, especially because there are so many people reporting this. And if a therapist is willing to look at it, you know, at least, and even believing it's just a psychological issue, at least then they can help deal with the perceived trauma, or at least and start to uncover the mechanics around why hundreds of thousands of people are reporting these things. So unfortunately, there is no place to go because people aren't taken seriously, or there's not many places to go. I always recommend there's a group called Opus. But that's out there. They are a great group of people that actually do work with MUFON, and they have some people around, kind of a network of therapists who will look into this.
We got to get some more experts who do that. We're going to come back. Final phone calls next. On our next Coast to Coast program, our reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us with some incredible stories of high strangeness. Make sure you're part of that. And we'll be back in a moment more with Alejandro Rojas as we talk about some of these just riveting UFO cases and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Alejandro. Tell us about this bizarre story about Russia's space troops not capable of defending against an alien attack.
Yeah, this is kind of funny. And it's interesting that Russia has kind of redesigned their space forces. And I love the term. I love all the terminology. They've changed it to the Aerospace Defense Forces, and they've really kind of mirrored it to the Air Force's Space Command. So these guys are in charge of anti-aircraft warfare, anti-missile defense, and also control of outer space. And I love the, kind of the terminology when you read about the like Russia, and if, especially if you go into Air Force Space Command, they're always talking about like exploratory troops and space troops, and you know, you can see that they're thinking about this kind of stuff. And when you read some of the interviews when they're talking about it, they do discuss that they're thinking of it, and they, you see a lot of references to controlling space controlling, you know, space areas and all of this sort of thing. So very futuristic, and Russia when they were doing a press conference about their reconfiguration and all of this stuff, someone asked them, well, are you guys going to be ready to defend against an extraterrestrial invasion? And they responded. They say, so far, we're not capable of that. We are unfortunately not ready to fight extraterrestrial civilizations. And they went on to say, but we do have, you know, a lot of capabilities to deal with aliens should this happen. But it was kind of a quirky, funny kind of media event that had happened recently in Russia.
Let's take some final calls here, Alejandro. The night is flying by. We go to Ron in San Francisco. Ron, go ahead.
Hi, I hope, Alejandro, you can help me with this. About the late 80s, early 80s, there was a daytime sighting in Australia that lasted like 3 days. It was a mass sighting, huge light in the sky, demonstrating, you know, otherworldly physics and just crazy stuff. But now I can find absolutely nothing about it whatsoever. I'm in San Francisco, and it was covered by my local mass, mainstream media, but I can't find nothing about it at all. Do you know anything about that sighting?
You know what? I cannot think of. I know there was an event in Rosedale, Australia. I remember, but I'm not sure if that was a mass sighting. That might be what you're talking about, so I would look that up. I know it's one of their bigger sightings, and that was in 1980.
Are you familiar, of course, with Peter Davenport from the UFO Center, National UFO Reporting
Center? Yes,
certainly. He has a great dossier of UFO reports. He might be able to help there, too.
Yeah, and he was the first to put them online, so his records online go back pretty far.
What do you think of the work of Zachariah Sitchin, the late Zachariah Sitchin?
That's a difficult one, and you know what? I gotta be. I'll be honest in that. By looking into it, he was one of the first people to feel like he could translate the Sumerian documents, some of the cuneiforms, which was a unique way that the Sumerians wrote on these circular objects, where you could roll it out onto a tablet and see their writings. And he saw that their mythology was around these beings that came from the sky, and he translated this all, of course, to be this story of these extraterrestrials that came to enslave humans, to mine gold because they needed the gold to take back to their planet, to help their atmosphere. However, we know over the decades much, much more about the cuneiforms, and even now in academia, there's a lot of argument over how to translate all of those. So it puts into question that his translation was necessarily 100% accurate. And then you get back to the idea of, you know, how literal can we take any mythology? If you look back at the Bible, or you look at the Greek gods, you know, certainly at the times they took those as literal, but do we now? So that's what makes that all kind of difficult, I think.
We go next to Gloria in Pasadena, California, west of the Rockies. Hi, Gloria. Go ahead. You're on with us.
Good evening. Hi, George. I've attended USC Medical School for 2 years, and I have personally met Dr. Greer. Mm-hmm. I have spoken with him eye to eye about the Atacama humanoid. In fact, there are three of them. I'm sorry to say, Alejandro, but you have given some inaccurate and incomplete information on it. Having been a medical student, I really know anatomy, physiology, embryology, histology, and x-ray. And that creature seems to be the real deal. The number of skull bones it has, the number of ribs it has, just looking at the spine, the body proportions. For example, that the head of this creature is greater than half of the overall body length of the creature. The leg bones don't match up. It is not a deformed or diseased fetus, human fetus. It is not. I looked at the photos and diagnostic scans of it. Any medical student would instantly know that it is clearly not humanoid.
Well, there's no doubt that it was once real. The problem is, even the DNA doesn't come back and say that it is humanoid. That's the problem, Alejandro.
Well, and I got to just say that what I'm going by is what the experts say. And these experts are such as this gentleman at Stanford, who is Dr. Greer's expert, or these other university professors at schools.
They simply say they don't know what it is.
That's not true. They say that it is human. The Stanford scientist very clearly says, in several different interviews, it is human. He's convinced it is human. He says if someone can demonstrate that, given what he found, that it is not human, he's willing to look at that, but he feels that the evidence demonstrates it is human. He feels that now he is looking for what is the anomalous deformity that this human skeleton had. And so have other experts. So when I have quotes or when I've written about on this story, and same with some of the others who have written about it, for instance, Lee Spiegel with the Huffington Post has written about it.
He sure
and
is.
She's a journalist as well. And all we're doing is repeating what the experts had said. Of course, Greer has his opinions. Others have their opinions, and which are fair, you know, and everybody can make up their own determination. But all I'm saying is that this is what the experts have to say. And when you're a journalist, that's what you have to go by.
You know what fascinates me? These underwater UFO cases.
Mm-hmm.
I just think they're unbelievable. Do you ever investigate those?
Yeah, definitely. There are many incredible underwater cases. And, you know, I'm at a loss right now as to there's a recent one that has been uncovered, and I can't remember the details. But certainly underwater UFO cases are really incredible, and they're some of the most mysterious.
Let's go to Ed in Bakersfield, California. Hey, Ed, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, my father related to me a story that he and my grandfather were hunting around Spokane in the 1950s. He was an Air Force investigator.
Okay.
And they sighted something in the sky, sort of like a dirigible with no visible means of propulsion. And it was silent, and it had portholes on the side. And while I was stationed in Europe in the 1970s, the wing commander was being followed by something. And when they retarded their throttles, this thing came by them and accelerated. And they firewalled their throttles, and those aircraft were capable of doing in excess of Mach 3.5, and it left them in the dust.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, this reminds me of another recent story, which is really exciting. There's a military magazine that was sent to us. My buddy Jason McClellan, who works with us, wrote this story, but it's at openminds.tv. And this is really cool because it's a story about some in the Combat Aircraft Monthly, where they interviewed some Iranian pilots, and the Iranians have been flying some F-14s, and they had a group of F-14s since 2004 that were to follow unmanned aircraft that the United States was flying around Iran to look at their nuclear capabilities. But here's the mystery. They reported, and they finally gave up following what they called luminous objects that they assumed were U.S. probes, because these things were coming in and out of the atmosphere, and they were moving at speeds of up to Mach 10. And even in the Combat Aircraft Monthly magazine, they note that we don't have anything capable of doing those things.
We would crush any pilot who might be in a craft like that.
And we don't have any unmanned aircraft that can go Mach 10. In fact, I think the fastest thing we know that we have can go something like Mach 9. So, incredible story. So this has really got kind of a buzz going where just like these aircraft experts are like, well, those certainly were not U.S. drones, whatever they were following.
Did you ever follow some of those incredible videos from the space shuttle?
Definitely. And a lot of those are mysterious in that some of them have explanations. I've been able to talk to a couple NASA guys, and we've got a couple interviews or that we've posted on the site. And they kind of explain them as space debris and dust. But there are a lot of those. There are a few of those videos that are really, truly strange that have not been addressed by NASA. And I always wonder why they don't speak to some of these videos.
Well, that's a good question. Do we have an answer for that?
Unfortunately, we don't, because a lot of times, sometimes you'll get an answer, well, what about the video from here or there? Oh, I'm not familiar with that, but it's probably this or that. But of course, if it's something anomalous, that's not a good enough answer. You want someone to take a look at it and see if they can give you a prosaic answer, because some of these, it defies the mind to figure out what prosaic could be in the video.
Let's go to Lee in Portland, Oregon. Wildcard line, Lee, take it away.
Yes, George, Alejandro, it's a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I've been trying to call Elaine for like 13 years, so I'm lucky to get on tonight.
Good for you.
I wanted to bring the attention to see, because I have never, ever heard about this before. I was laying on my roof one night several years ago, and I was looking up into the sky like I always do, and I thought that I was seeing a satellite. And then pretty soon I see another one and another one, and I'm thinking that there was maybe 40 to 50. I lost count after that. And they were all moving from south to northeast. And I was wondering if you've ever heard of anything like that. I'd never heard of it in my life. But I saw multiple objects up there so tiny, they look like satellites, all moving in unison in one direction.
Wow. I would say I've heard of smaller numbers, maybe a dozen. I've even myself seen three, which is kind of weird because satellites aren't supposed to be moving together like that. 40 or so is certainly very significant. That's incredible.
Yeah.
So I got to tell people out there, you know, people ask, you know, how do you see a UFO? How do you see something strange? You look, you watch, you go out there at night as much as possible, and you watch the sky, and you're going to get something. And you know, with night vision getting as good as it is, I think that may be one of the next breakthrough when it comes to a UFO video, because people are getting some pretty extraordinary stuff, I think, on using the night vision.
Third generation. Ed Grimsley's got some great things going on, huh?
Right. I believe you had a sighting, I think, at the Congress.
I did.
Wasn't it a few years ago?
Yep.
With Ed Grimsley?
Saw two objects up there. They were strange, I'll tell you. They made these 90-degree turns.
Right, yeah. Incredible stuff. I've seen incredible stuff I couldn't explain either. I mean, one time I was with the Navajo Rangers, these guys who brought they investigate, you know, UFO phenomena, but and they're official law enforcement on the Navajo Nation here, and they brought some night vision, and one of them and I, right when we looked at the sky, there were five objects near each other that dispersed, all in different directions. And that's amazing. What the heck would do that?
That sure is. Let's take one more call. Adrian in Port Everglades, Florida. Yo, Adrian.
Alejandro, how are you all doing tonight?
Good, good.
All right. I had my sister and my mother had a sighting back in February of this year. And it was around like probably like 3 minutes from my house. And there was at least like 15 people on the side of the road looking up, and they saw three strange objects, and all of them were white. My sister has like a 12-minute video of it, and I also have it. It's at my house right now. And in the pictures, they're all are red spirals inside the pictures, but in the video, they're all white. They don't change colors at all, but in the video, two of them disappear and reappear on another side of the video. And after that, I asked my mom, because I'm familiar with after effects of UFO sightings. After I asked my mom, did she see any helicopters, any black helicopters around the sky? And she said she saw a white helicopter with no markings on it at all. It was just pure white. And it looked like it was heading in the same direction.
Some of those could be trackers. but who knows what the rest are. Alejandro, we're out of time. Good luck with Open Minds Radio, okay?
Yeah, thank you so much. And, you know, if people want to join us at the UFO Congress, just Google UFO Congress or go to openminds.tv.
For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Timothy Banal, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, John B. Wells, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe.